On today's Question of Faith, what becomes of the precious blood that remains after all the congregation is received? Hey everybody, this is Question of Faith. I am Mike Hayes. It only took me five takes to get that question out. And I am the Young Adult Ministry Director here in the Diocese of Cleveland.
And I'm Father Damian Ference, a vicar for evangelization.
I'm Mary Rich. I'm the Director of the Office for Worship for the Diocese of Cleveland.
Yay, Mary's back.
Welcome back. More liturgy questions, my fave.
I can tell your heart is all aflutter, Father.
It's burning within me. Are you kidding me? So this is a good question because it's obvious when, if there are hosts left over after the communion rite, after the distribution to the faithful, I mean, if there are a few, the priest may consume, but if there are a significant amount, those hosts go back in the tabernacle, and that is the proper place for the reposition of the Blessed Sacrament as host. But in the form of precious blood, the question is, what happens? Because the tabernacle is not the proper repository for the precious blood. So this person who wrote in wants to know what happens then.
Yes.
Mary, do you want to start us off? Or?
In general, when the precious blood is consecrated at the liturgy, and if there is some left, and you have both ordinary ministers, that would be clergy, or extraordinary ministers, like lay Eucharistic ministers, the precious blood gets consumed. However, we never self-communicate. So if I'm the Eucharistic minister, and I'm an extraordinary minister because I don't have a collar, and the last person has received and there's still precious blood in my cup, I can't just go glug, 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 and be done. So communion is about receiving, not taking. So the proper thing for that extraordinary minister to do is to bring that cup back up to the altar, to the deacon, if there's a deacon there, if the priest is there. And then either the priest or the deacon can consume, or if it's not right for them to do that, if there's too much left, then they can re-present it to, if I'm the extraordinary minister, they can re-present the cup to me and ask me to consume.
Nice. That's pretty much what I was going to say, too.
And where does that happen? That just happens over at the credence table or?
At the altar.
At the altar.
Usually at the altar. Now, when Bishop Lennon was here, I think he preferred, because then after that, then the vessels are purified. And they can be purified immediately then or after Mass, right? Isn't that right? So I'm looking at the germ. And when the distribution of communion is over, the priest or deacon or acolyte, because an acolyte is entrusted with a special ministry, purifies the paten over the chalice and also the chalice itself. And obviously, if you have other chalices or other ciboria, then you would do that there too. But then then it's purified. So you consume what is there, and then you would pour a little water. Some actually priests pour a little bit of wine and water for their purification and then purify those vessels after that.
Can I just make one little point there?
You may.
You said the priest or the deacon or the acolyte. In this sense, in what the germ is saying, acolyte is an instituted role.
Correct.
We're not
one.
Talking about an altar server.
Right.
I know some churches call their servers their acolytes.
Correct.
But really, that is an ordained ministry.
Well, it's close to ordained. It used to be a minor
Institute.
Order,
yeah.
but now
yeah.
it's not. But in order to become a priest or a deacon, you have to become an acolyte along the way. So, yes, it's a formalized, instituted ministry within the church, as is a lector. So and we use those names like acolyte and lector, but there are formally instituted lectors and acolytes in the church, too. That's a good
yes.
it's a good catch.
Distinction. Yes.
Fun question. I had a pastor call me one day and ask me about institution of ladies as acolytes. And the answer to that is it would be a possibility according to Rome. However, they have to be formed first
Correct.
Before they can be instituted
Correct.
And we don't have that formation program set up yet.
Correct.
So that's why it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, it's a possibility. Pope Francis made that a possibility. Because when it's no longer an order, when it's no longer part of a minor order, then it's open to not just men who can be ordained priests. So that it's consistent, it makes sense. But you're right, in our diocese we haven't moved in that the formation of those ministers yet, outside of seminarians and deacons.
And Mary, correct me if I'm wrong here, and I won't even edit it out if I am. But if you're a deacon or a acolyte, you are to purify at the credence table. Only the priest is to purify at the altar. Is that correct?
I think that is correct.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
This is why I don't
He's
do liturgy. Yeah, see? Yeah, it's good.
This is why these questions are your favorite, Father.
Yeah.
You learn.
I don't like
you
them.
Know.
That's why you guys are here answering them.
It's interesting because these are the questions we get most often, of course, are questions of, you know, questions on liturgy and canon law. If you got others, Father Damien prefers those.
Yeah, give me not some good philosophical questions or on culture.
Not that we don't want your liturgy questions or your canon law questions, but
yeah,
Father Damien would prefer other questions.
Well, no, it's fine. You bring in Father Eric to do these things.
I mean, I have preferences, too. I mean, you know, similar to you, probably. I like the liturgy questions, actually, but I prefer the ones that you like as well. So we take all kinds of questions. If you have a question, by the way, mhayes@diocesecleveland.org to send them our way, and we will answer them on this here podcast.
Let me say this, because this is a cool thing, that when the... If you watch the priest or the deacon or the acolyte, when they are purifying their vessels, they are to say a prayer silently. And I could do it by heart, but I have it in front of me, so I might as well read it. What has passed our lips as food, O Lord, may we possess in purity of heart, that what has been given to us in time may be our healing for eternity. So on many credence tables or on the wall by the credence table, that prayer will be there. I know it's at our seminary. So you're supposed to be praying that prayer as you're doing the purification, which is pretty cool.
That's
very
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a hard time memorizing that one. I've printed it out and put it on the credence table. It's kind of familiar.
I was adding a word to it, and I have to remove the word. I was saying, what has passed our lips as food, O Lord, may we possess in purity of heart what has been given to us in time of your healing for all eternity. It doesn't say all eternity. It just says eternity. Sure. But for some reason, I added all. So I have to remove the all.
Yeah, it's a school of redundancy school, right? All eternity. It's a,
yeah.
You can't have all eternity.
I don't know why
it's
I did
eternity.
That. I must have heard someone say, I don't know. Perhaps. Anyway, I'm doing my best, so leave me alone.
That's right. English major in me went all nuts on you there.
Yeah, the philosopher in me did too.
Whatever. The other question I think that would come from this is what if there's too much? You know, like we don't want Eucharistic ministers falling down the aisle because, you know, while it is the blood of Christ, it still retains the effects of alcohol, shall we say. And so if there's a lot of, and I've seen this happen. I mean, there's a lot of wine left, you know, that they poured in before it was consecrated. And now they have to consume all this. So what happens? I mean, do we just keep asking people to come forward for a second cup, or
that's what I do. I don't think you're ever supposed to pour precious blood down the sacrarium, unless someone's like spit up in it or something like that.
Right.
And we should say this too: if you don't know what a sacrarium is, every church is supposed to have a sink back in the sacristy that drains directly into the ground. So after the vessels are used at Mass, they're pure, they're cleansed once again at this sink, and so if there are crumbs, they're never just crumbs. They're small particles of the body of Christ that may not be visible to the human eye, but they're not going into the sewer system. They're going into the ground. It's more reverential that way.
Yeah. Correct, yeah.
One of the things Bishop Wust and I talked about when we talked about this question, actually, was the concept of, are you receiving a second time at the same liturgy? Like, for instance, if I was asked to consume this cup, am I receiving it a second time? Is it like I'm getting twice as much Jesus, so I'm twice as good as you?
Yes. No.
And sometimes, like, that's a cultural mindset. Mm. But really, what we're talking about at Mass is one body, one spiritual communion. So we're still receiving of the one spiritual communion, even if we have partaken twice out of the cup because we were helping.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You don't get more grace from more communion. Right.
And I'm not twice as good.
Right. So anyway, so I think that covers our question for today. And so, Father Damien, you've been traveling around.
I have. I recently was down at Sacred Heart Parish in Wadsworth.
Oh,
I have good friends down there. In fact, one of their parishioners was just ordained a transitional deacon. His name's John Hawkins, Deacon John Hawkins. And I met John when he was in high school because his youth minister, Allison Gosiaco, was his youth minister over a decade ago. And she was in my youth group.
Oh, wow.
From Hudson. So if she's my spiritual daughter, John's kind of like spiritual grandson or something. Anyway, it was very cool. He was ordained, so I went down there to have dinner with Allison's family. I stayed at the rectory that night and then concelebrated Mass the next morning because John was preaching the Mass, his first time, you know, assisting as a deacon, and he did a really fine job. He also assisted with Tolle Legge for me for a while, so we go way back. parish is pretty great. The pastor is Father Joe Laubach. He's been there since 1997, and he says, I've been here since before Mother Teresa and Princess Diana died.
Wow.
Which for his parochial vicar's like, oh my gosh, you're so old. And his current parochial vicar was one of my teens in Hudson, Father Patrick Schultz, mm-hmm. who's just finishing his assignment there. He's finishing up 4 years. But they got great music ministry down there, the tons of young people. They actually, I think they have the record for the diocese for bringing people into the church this year. They had 35 with 16 awesome. Baptisms. So pretty impressive. The place is on fire. And it was funny, at the end of Mass, just after communion, one baby cried and then it like rippled throughout. And I'm like, the babies are getting restless. And they all just played off each other. It was like a cacophony of baby cries. But it was also good because when the babies are crying, you know your parish ain't dying. So,
yep, I was going to say, if you're not crying, you're dying.
Yep.
That's great.
You ever been there, Sacred Heart?
I have not. Watch
You'd love the music.
Off my radar. I would love the music.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a lovely place. John Woost is there, the brother of Bishop Woost, who is in the deacon formation program.
Nice.
And so he's from that parish. And as is Mike Neese, who's also in the deacon formation program.
And they have two deacons down mm-hmm. there, too. And one of them is the dentist, Deacon Rich.
And that's Sacred Heart in Wadsworth, Ohio. So check that out. Way out in the heart of Medina County, correct?
Yes. I think, I don't know Aren't if it's they? In the heart of it. It's in the northern yeah. section of Medina, but they're also very close to Summit.
Yes. That's
so
what I was gonna say.
Some people think they're in Summit. Some people think they're in Wayne or Ashland. Mm. But yeah, they're in Medina County there. And they have a nice grade school, too.
Yeah.
Rockin'
right.
grade school.
Yep. And so we're looking at the readings for the fifth Sunday of Easter. Love the gospel for this week, talking about the vine, and says it talks about prune. You are already pruned because of the word that I spoke to you, which I liked that. When I was listening to the synod, in the one in Rome, and they talked about, you know, when we listen to each other, we're going to get pruned. Mm. We're going to get rid of some of our own biases and some of our own prejudices that we have. And that's going to be painful sometimes. You know, getting pruned is not an easy thing. And I said, so be ready to be pruned as you listen to people throughout your time in the synod. So,
sounds good.
Yeah.
I will be a priest 21 years in May.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the fifth Sunday of Easter that I celebrated my first Mass of Thanksgiving, and these were the readings. And I remember that specifically because, for two reasons, I was nervous at the beginning of Mass, and I welcomed people and said, it's the fifth Sunday of Lent, and Father Carlin's like, it's Easter. I'm like, man, I already screwed up, so this isn't going to go, but it did go well. And then I preached that weekend on how the different vocations support each other. So I'm even thinking of my friend Allison, married Taylor. They got married right out of college. They have 7 kids now. And Father Patrick and I were over there with their family on Saturday night, and how important it is for families to have priest friends and religious friends and deacon friends and like we and single friends. Like, we all need each other as the body of Christ. And I like that imagery a lot for that. I think it's super helpful. How about you, Mary?
I absolutely agree. When you can only get richer in growth when you're exposed to more people. Mm. So when your family, you know, family doesn't just have to be the blood relatives, but your priest friends and your nieces and nephews that are cousins and uncles that are not necessarily connected by blood, but they're friends of the family, that just helps for a more vibrant experience growing up, being exposed to wider ideas, being exposed to greater values, being able to see that other people think the same way that you do. Again, I keep saying blessings of not being in regular parish life is occasionally I get time to spend that I didn't used to have. So this year on Easter was the first time I ever went to the family brunch when the food was still out.
Nice.
That was great.
Nice.
And I was with a niece and nephew who have a son who struggles with some of the same issues that my daughter does medically. Mm. And we were able to talk about specialists and about services that the county provides and things like that. Like, I never really thought of them in that way, because I kind of lived in my own tunnel or my own bubble in my own house. But when you start broadening your horizons and when you start recognizing that you're part of a bigger picture, and I translate this to parish life, to our lives as Catholics, you know, whether we're in this building in 1404 on East 9th Street or whether we're in a parish, we're part of a bigger picture. And we, as the Diocese of Cleveland, are part of an even bigger picture. I got to go to a meeting in Detroit a couple of weeks ago of Region 6. So State of Ohio, State of Michigan. And this was a grouping of all the directors of the offices for worship. And we got to talk about what are some of the concerns that we have in the diocese? What are some of the things that we see flourishing in the diocese? What are some of the things that we're doing well in the diocese? I talked about my daily prayers. And all these other priests that were in the room were like, that's a great idea to be able to pray with people every day. So I think when you open yourself to that, yes, there's some pruning. Is that something that maybe takes me out of my comfort zone? Maybe.
Sure.
But it enables the growth. It facilitates the growth.
Mm-hmm. We all get richer when Mary's around.
With an H.
See what I did there?
I saw.
So anyway, thank you for joining us once again, Mary.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. Of course.
We'll have you back again for more liturgy
questions.
Whenever
there's liturgy questions.
So I'm going to write some liturgy questions.
That's right.
You should do music questions. I'm better at music questions than liturgy questions.
That's what we'll do. So if you have music questions, write them here. MHayes, diocesecleveland.org. We'll have this and a whole lot more next time here on Question of Faith.